everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Points on the Board. And this is a special episode for us today. It is our 100th episode. As you guys know, I made my bones in the fantasy sports industry before I got all political, ran for office, got elected, and came out of the closet as a conservative Latino and lost all my friends. We are going to talk about none of that today. Do not look at my guests in that form or fashion. These are pure play fantasy sports legends. You know, I got into the industry back in the mid 90s. One of our guests is Bob Harris. I saw the Flash Report is what it was called. He had the latest news. He was on there with Steve Cohen. Most of you people don't know who Steve Cohen is, but he's a legend within the industry. And then I saw Big John Georgopoulos's website, and he is now my partner. I actually reached out to work with him today in the sense of this current venture because I always wanted to work with him because of his what he did in the fantasy sports industry. You see, people in life, sometimes it's timing. Sometimes some of us do better than others. But when I saw Big John's work, it was always high quality. We're going to talk to Mr. Larry Schecker. He is the writer, author of the history of the fantasy sports. And then we're going to bring on Bob Harris, who's a legend. We're going to bring on Greg Kellogg, who is one of the first inductees into both Fantasy Sports Hall of Fames. And then we're going to bring on a personal favorite of mine, Michael Fabiano. I don't know if Michael remembers. I'm going to bring it up. But we used to have some serious conversations on ICQ. That was the old messenger back in the day when he was over at CBS Sportslines. But make sure you like, share, and subscribe to this podcast, Points on the Board, and specifically share this episode, as a lot of fantasy people will get a good kick out of that. And with that, let me bring on Mr. Larry Schecter. Larry, how you doing, sir?
I'm good. How are you, one?
I'm hanging in there. It's an early morning for me out here on the West Coast. You know, Howie, how's the weather there? You are in Boca Raton, right?
Yes, I am. And this is an early morning for me at 10 a.m. because I'm not a morning person.
You know, I have a friend who lives in Boca Raton, and I hope everything is okay from that last hurricane. If I remember correctly, weren't you? I don't know if it actually hit through you guys, but it was a lot of worry.
Yeah, no, we missed it here. But guys, there are a lot of fantasy guys in this area. Michael Fabiano's from West Palm Beach, and Fort Lauderdale. A lot of people were from Fort Lauderdale. Fort Lauderdale was where CBS Sportsline was, and actually still is. So a lot of the pioneers were in Fort Lauderdale working for CBS Sportsline.
Exactly. That is true. I do remember that. It's unique, Fort Lauderdale. You don't see a lot of conglomerates out of Fort Lauderdale. And back in the day, as you stated, it was Sportsline, then it was CBS Sportsline. Right. That was one of the biggest players at the time. Well, first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself. What I'd like to know about you is your own fantasy sports background. You're the author of the history of fantasy sports. I want you to talk about that. But first of all, who you are and what brought you to write the book, but more importantly, what are your ties specifically to the fantasy sports industry?
Well, I started playing about 1992, immediately loved fantasy baseball and fantasy football. And I won the CDM challenge, which was a big competition, where that's 1 year there were 6,000 teams, another year there were 7,500 teams. In 2002, I won that overall competition. And in 2005, I was the first person to win that overall competition for the second time. And they had a thing in 2005 where the winner of the CDM challenge got to be in next year's Labor League. That's the USA Today sponsored expert.
Gotcha.
League.
Okay. Right.
I got
right.
to be in labor, and then I liked labor. I liked being in labor so much. I didn't want to have to make, you know, especially being just a 1 year thing unless I won CDM again. But I kind of worked out a deal with a company called Sandlot Shrink to represent them because they had a spot mm-hmm. in labor. I got to be there. I did a little work for them, and I got to be their representative in labor. And then within a couple of years or so, Tout Wars, the other big experts league, invited me to be in there. So I've been in labor and Tout Wars for about 20 years straight now.
You know, I brought that up to Big John, our producer, my partner here last night. I said, I don't know how, but he's involved in the Baseball Expert League. He's been there forever. You know, so it's interesting to hear that story. You bring up Sandlot Shrink. My first name I thought about was Bob Riddell. You know, he used to write for them. I don't know if he's still, God bless Bobby, who's older back then. So I don't know where he stands today, but a lot of old names I'll probably be thinking of today. And with that, Larry, let's welcome. I don't want to keep these Hall of Famers. Some of them are on time limits here. Their time is busy. So we are truly grateful that they came on. And I want to start first with, Bob Harris and Michael Fabiano. Gentlemen. Welcome aboard. And to the audience out there, I have known these individuals for decades now. I am so proud, so happy of their success. When I exited stage, I didn't know what was going to happen with my life. But when I look back at my previous life, you two still successful. And Michael made his bones not only at CBS Sportsline, but then he went on to help bring NFL.com into the modern age of fantasy football. And Bob, you know, and Bob will correct me if I'm wrong, but Bob has become a superstar. You know, I look at the fantasy industry and I see Bob's name everywhere. You know, he's hosting an event, he's traveling, he's married to a woman that he's not, what's that saying? She's out of your league, Bob.
This is true.
Michael, if you can, tell us a little bit about the audience about yourself and how you made your bones.
Well, first off, yes, Bob did outkick his coverage and by a very large margin when it came to his lovely fiance. So started in 2000 with CBS Sportsline and was there for about six-ish years, was in Fort Lauderdale for a few years. And believe it or not, I was working down in Battery Park, and we left the office in Lower Manhattan in March. And then, of course, 9/11 happened just a few months later. So if I was still in New York City, I would have been on the Staten Island Ferry coming across when that all happened. So, but we were down in Fort Lauderdale, left CBS in 2006 to take over as the lead fantasy analyst, editor, everything for the NFL. I was there for 16 years. Also worked with SiriusXM. Now, of course, with Sports Illustrated, Westwood One, and doing a whole bunch of fun stuff. Yeah, this is, I mean, we're going into year 25. I know I'm not even close to Bob Harris. You know, what are you on, year 55, Bob? But, yeah, I've been doing this for a long time.
But I gotta say, go ahead.
55,000, but who's counting?
I got it to the audience. He's with Sports Illustrated. He is a real human being. That is not an AI configuration there. In front
of the camera. Well, if this is AI, they better start doing a better job because you know they could do much better than this. That's for sure. Yeah, but and Bob is one of my dear closest friends, even you know regardless of fantasy sports, but. So I've met a lot of really great people, you know, including yourself, William, over the years. A lot of good people in the industry.
Okay. And yes, you are a legend yourself there. You know, Bob is a senior elder here, but everything you helped do with the NFL and bringing them
Bob
up
is a legendary king. He's a legendary king. I don't know if there I'm a go. Legend, but Bob is go. A legendary king.
There we go.
Harder working than Bob Harris.
I didn't wear my boots. Sports space.
And with that, Bob, you know, the audience say, who's this Bob guy? You know,
the hell is this guy?
Tell us a little bit about yourself there, Bob.
And well, I would highly, first of all, I would highly recommend reading Larry's book, The History of Fantasy Sports, to get a good feel for all the people in this space have been amazing. And I'm sure Larry has, like, so what, and by the way, I started doing this as a job, as a business. I made it a business in 1993. And when I say made it a business, I just started doing it and hoped to make some money. And, like I've been now 32 years in it and I'm about 5 years away from breaking even, I believe. Uh-huh. Possibly. But
good luck. We got to send a prayer for you to get that goal.
I appreciate that, Larry. But I, you know, I'm sure Larry heard this there. Like, you know, back in the day, there were a handful of us who kind of, you know, jumped into this thing and, I'm sure we all have varying views of our level of importance and our contributions to the industry, probably, you know, personally inflated by all of us to some degree because we lived in these little bubbles, right? Like I would talk to, you know, when William got into the industry, we would all communicate and talk and there was a lot of friends. There was a lot of frenemies, you know, there were people that you begrudgingly got along with and respected because they were doing a good job, but you wanted to whoop their tails every day. So it's just been a long.
Are you talking about me, Harris?
No, I never paid any attention to you. No, it's just been an interesting journey. If you, you know, to start at the beginning, and Larry's book outlines it so well, like you just like era by era, and it's broken up in a way that's really, you know, you kind of get a feel for all the kind of milestone kind of people and events and industry changes that come along. So highly recommend that book and God bless Larry for having to sit down and listen to a bunch of people talk about something that they all see differently and weaving it all together to give a complete picture of what's going on. So I've been doing this a while, been through magazines, which was a big part of my life for a number of years with the great Emil Pavlik. I'm sure we'll talk about him at some point. And then most recently jumping on board with Football Guys, who I have a long history with too. I mean, I went back, you can go back, Joe Bryant from that website. I published his first article and worked closely with him and David Dodds. David Dodds and I would spend, days at a time on the telephone hacking websites, trying to figure out how to steal technology, to make our websites work better. David was super slick with building tools and things like that back when people didn't do tools, right? We were working with Java applets and, you know, all kinds of clunky stuff. And I was like big into web design and made a lot of really cool stuff and became actually kind of a bit of a web designer on the side had to do something to make some money. I ended up making sites. Like I did the Fantasy Insight sites. I was big making Football Guy sites. I did Hanson's website. I did a lot of websites. Right. I did Cohen and Glazer's website. So I was like, I was doing a lot of that because I always felt like if we're going to be like an industry, we should all look good. And one of the things I learned early as soon as the internet came on is like, wow, I can look as good as anybody. All I have to do is look like something. And I won like some stupid award from like the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, like a top 5% of the web or something. And the guy calls me and says, I'm looking at your website and I'm like, how many people do you have working there? Like 50? And I'm like sitting there in a puddle of sweat in my underpants going, why should I tell him? Yes, 50, 50 of us here.
No, actually only 48.
I'm just trying to avoid putting that mental, image of Bob sweating in his underpants. I don't want it in my head.
Well, you know, Bob, you and Emo, I looked at it as oddballs because everybody was doing HTML and you guys were doing some product called Fusion, something Fusion. Code Fusion, yes. So I always thought you were the oddball with the website. I was like, they're the only ones doing this, you know? And a little tidbit here. Now, he'd been around with Fanix and all of that, but we gave Joe Bryan his first regular column called Chalk Talk. And after that, he said there, hey, I got to talk to you guys. I want to go start this new project, etc. And he wanted to take Chalk Talk with him. I said, no, you can go. That's fine. We appreciate all the work, but we're keeping the title Chalk Talk. You know, Larry, so in writing this book, tell us what drove you to write it. And more importantly, what were your first thoughts when you began to write this in terms of like, and what am I getting in here? Or were you able to put this together quickly? You know, how did that come about?
Well, what happened is I've looked at the industry for several years and I wondered where did this all come from? Because, you know, years ago people had ideas for games and now it's millions and millions and millions of people playing worldwide, everything from fantasy football to fantasy wakeboarding, fantasy bass fishing. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry. You've got SiriusXM radio 24/7. You got dozens, hundreds of fantasy analysts. You got news services, stat services. Like, I wonder, where did this all come from? Nobody has ever explained this. There's never been a book about the history. So I decided I was going to write a book. Call it the history of fantasy sports, say, you know, who did what, when, how did it all happen. I thought it was something I could knock out in a few months. I was crazy wrong. It took 18 months full-time work researching, interviewing dozens of people, writing. And what happened, though, early on, I started to hear and read fascinating stories about what people did. And some of them were inspirational. Some of them would bring a tear to my eye. Lots of funny anecdotes. So I realized early on I could write the history of fantasy sports, who did what when, how did it happen, and I'd get the job done. And it would also come off like a very boring research paper. But by intertwining the stories of what people did, it would be interesting to read. I'd get the job done, and instead of being boring, it would be very interesting because I was finding out all this fascinating stuff. So that's what happened. That's where I got the subtitle, you know, the subtitle and the stories of the people who made it happen. And that's what makes it interesting. The reviews are fantastic. People say it's easy to read. It's fascinating. The Midwest Book Review said fascinating from start to finish. And this is a reviewer who's never even played fantasy sports, because it's not about, you know, how fantasy sports works or strategy. It's about the stories of the entrepreneurs. Like Bob Harris is in there. Michael Fabiano's in there. And, you know, one thing about Bob Harris, you know, when you talk about the stories, you know, there's a story in there about how his grandmother, he was living with his grandmother. His grandmother is like, you know, this fantasy sports thing isn't working out too well for you. Maybe it's time to do something else, like go get a job at McDonald's or something.
Yeah. I forgot about that. When I first met Bob, he mentioned you were always with your grandmother, you know. Larry, what is the two questions, twofold? Don't take it literally, but I can't think of another term. What's the most bizarre, the most out there, you're like, holy mackerel, story you heard? And what's the most heartwarming story you heard?
Okay, bizarre, there are probably several of them. I'll give you one that comes to mind. There's a guy named Will Pullman who wrote one of the first publications for fantasy. And, you know, there's a little bit of information about what he did, but one thing, when his first year in fantasy football, the first year he played fantasy football came down to the last week of the regular season. It was a Sunday night or a Monday night game. He had one player left, and if this player got a touchdown, he made the playoffs. And if he didn't get a touchdown, he did not make the playoffs. And it was Sunday night or Monday night game. Back then, you know, there's no internet or anything, so he had to wait for the box score in the paper next day. The next morning, on his way to work, he buys a newspaper, and he goes into his office building, into the men's room, sits down at a stall, flipping through the paper, gets to the sports page, finds a box score, sees this guy got a touchdown. And he says, yes, yes, yes. A minute later, he walks out of the stall. Three guys are staring at him.
He's probably like, that was the best bowel movement I ever had.
Yeah. And then, now, your other one, I think you said heartwarming. one of the most heartwarming stories, my book starts with precursors to fantasy, like their tabletop games and board games, App and Stratomatic. And then it goes into the invention and spread of fantasy football, the invention and spread of fantasy baseball, the first publications, news services, stat services, you know, everything that occurred. There's like different chapters for different things, right through more modern times, like daily fantasy and worldwide expansion. But the precursors, App and Stratomatic, there are a lot of leagues where people started in high school or college, and they've been playing together for 30, 40, 50 years. It's kept them together. And there's an Apple League, a guy named Randy Walker in 2018. He'd been in this Apple League for years. 2018, he was diagnosed with ALS. And he and everybody else thought he would have to stop playing. His wife said, if you want to keep playing, I'll do whatever I have to do so you can keep playing. She went to the games with him, rolled the dice. He would tell her what moves to make. And he played, and I believe it was, the facts are correct in the book. I'm remembering off the top of my head. I think it was probably the third year in this condition. He was now at a point where he could only communicate through an eye reader and a computer, and his wife could read his lips. And in that condition, his team came from two runs behind in extra innings to win his first ever APA World Series championship after 39 years in the league. And everybody broke out crying.
Yeah, that is heartwarming. The thing, everybody will tell you, the one thing I always, I don't talk fantasy sports much anymore, but in the day I used to tell families, I go, War of the Warcraft, I saw a great special on Netflix about that, it connected families who were struggling. And I used to tell my friends, hey, man, play with your son. You know, get him in the league. I mean, you guys will bond. And my producer has just hit me up. He says, apologies to you, Michael. I know you're on time limited. And he's like, you're wasting Michael's time away. He's got to go. Talk to him. So, Michael, tell us a little bit about the early days of Sportsline. And I said off camera, you and I used to talk a lot in ICQ. And ICQ was the old messenger. And I remember you were deliberating within yourself, I don't really want to go to California. I like it here, but it may be time to move on. And I was like, and I had just left NFL, the NFL.com. I was Brian Bonini, my former partner, and I were the first fantasy network analyst there. I was telling you, go do it. Do it. This is a great career move. And you did it. And I was so happy and I became so proud of you. Even though we were friends, I felt like a parent. You know, I helped nudge him along a little bit. And not that I did. You made your own decision as a grown man. But tell us a bit about those travels.
Yeah, so it's funny because the whole CBS Sportsline thing, I found that job opening, and that was commissioner.com. Remember, that was the – you know, the fraternity right. brothers from Carnegie Mellon who created this amazing platform that, you know, CBS Sportsline obviously bought. And they were looking for a fantasy football writer, editor type. And this was in the early 2000s. And they were getting just hundreds and hundreds of resumes and ended up boiling down to me and Tristan Cockcroft, who's at ESPN, also is a dear friend of mine. And initially they chose Tristan. And then they came back to me and said, hey, you know, we know that we went in a different direction, but can you write 50 player profiles or 80 profiles for basketball? Because initially I was doing fantasy basketball. And I did them, and I'll never forget it. I was sitting in my dad's house watching Yankees Red Sox. I'm a diehard Yankees fan. And the phone rings, and it's Dave Hirsch, who was one of the fraternity brothers at commissioner.com. He said, hey, listen, we couldn't decide between you and Tristan, so we're going to hire you both. That's how it all started. And I was working in New York City, guys. $37,000 was my initial salary. Bob Harris makes that in 2 months now. You know, he makes the big dough. And so I remember it was me and Tristan, and we had Marlon McRae as well, who's no longer in the industry, and Scott Angle, of course, who's also all a famer. That's right. And we had a great team. In fact, Scott, myself, and Tristan all ended up in the FSWA Hall of Fame, which is, you know, obviously a great honor. And what's funny is that we had one of the best teams that there was at that point. And, you know, fantasy was just starting to build. I was doing radio shows and I was nervous. Okay. I ended up doing live television in front of millions of people at halftimes of NFL games on the NFL Network. And I was like, wow, boy, I mean, it's crazy. And CBS, they allowed me to – CBS Sports, which is different than commissioner.com, of course. They allowed me to get involved in the NFL Today. So I would answer questions on the bottom scroll and have starts and sits. I would go to the studio. I became really good friends. Bob's going to make fun of me for name dropping, but I became really good friends with like Jim Nance and a lot of others at CBS. And I ended up starting a celebrity league there, the Gridiron Guru League, with, you know, Jim was in it, Brent Jones, Randy Cross, Phil Sims, Bonnie Bernstein, Boomer Esiason, Dan Marino. It was awesome. And then, you know, they allowed me to, you know, to kind of go in that direction and trying to build up not only fantasy football, but CBS Sportsline's fantasy content. And eventually I ended up becoming the first fantasy analyst to be on one of the four major networks on the fantasy football show with me, Gus Johnson, and Randy Cross. And I go back. I have that show on DVD. I was so bad. I was stiff as a board. You know, you're nervous. You know what I mean? At that point, I'm you know, in my mid-20s. I've never been on TV before. You got this big studio at CBS. And it was great. It was a fantastic stepping stone. And then – obviously, NFL decided to go in house, and they offered me the job of kind of just being all fantasy football, writing, editing, etc., all this stuff. I basically wrote the NFL.com fantasy football draft kit, you know, by myself for years and years and years, projections, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, I remember the conversations I had because I'm like, California? That's a long way away from Connecticut and New York and what I'm used to. And guys, the job paid $70,000 in the first year. I mean, this is California. Think about it. It ain't cheap to live there. And obviously, ended up being a really good career decision. And I was there for 15 plus years and did a lot of really cool stuff and met a lot of really cool people and have had a lot of really cool friends along the way. And then, you know, the NFL gig ended during COVID. Unfortunately, that happened to a lot of people at the NFL Network. If your contract was up, COVID hit, they're not bringing you back. You know, so I ended up going to Sports Illustrated, working with Sirius XM. So I'm still with SI and doing a lot of stuff with Westwood One. I've been doing stuff with them for, you know, 20 plus years.
So, you know, so, that first performance, you know, was pretty horrible. And we all had such high hopes that you would get better. And like, it's been a struggle for you.
Yeah,
you're an ass, Bob. For a guy who's been covering fantasy football since the guys wore leather helmets, I don't want to hear it from you. Yeah, but now you're getting a little behind the scenes of everyday conversations that Bob Harris and I have. We probably talk two or three times on the phone every single day, and all we do is talk trash to each other.
Well, that's how that, you know, that was the thing about fantasy, and we're not going to talk about it. But John Madden, Sega Genesis, these football brought a lot of people together, and fantasy sports brought a lot of people together. Mm-hmm. What people don't realize about Sports Illustrated, Michael, and I'm sure we all know in this room, Larry, I'm sure you ran across it in your research here. Sports Illustrated actually is a small player in a sense in the overall scheme, but it has a rich history. In fact, Bob, I think you did some writing for them back in the 90s, if I remember correctly. They've been around.
From 98 to 2007, I did a weekly column for them. So, yeah, it was a good time. Whatever they are now, I mean, to me, the name Sports Illustrated is conjures the memory of running out to my mailbox every Friday as a kid to grab that thing before my dad got a hold of it. And so I could devour it first and reading, you know, some of the great columns. You know, Peter King's column back in the day was one that really got me interested. So writing on the same platform as him for some period of time was a huge deal. I'm sure it's like, you know, still for Michael too. It's like, you know, you have that connection from over time.
That was one of my yearly Christmas presents was getting the Sports Illustrated subscription and whatever gift you got as a result of subscribing to Sports Illustrated, and 100% of the time that was something Dallas Cowboys related for me.
And I want to drop a name. I only met James a couple of times. If I remember correctly, it was James Quintong. That was he's with ESPN now.
Yep.
He's with ESPN. And Michael, what are you doing over there? Are they looking for you to build out that whole process, or are you just content writing in your rankings?
They're trying to build something at Sports Illustrated, and you know, the numbers have been, you know, very good considering that, you know, we're not ESPN or we're not, you know, NFL and we're not you know, Yahoo, that kind of thing. So the numbers are really good, and we're going to continue to build. So fantasy is something that Sports Illustrated is behind, and now, you know, we are now run by Minute Media. If you paid attention, the whole Arena Group mess was not a comfortable time this year for a lot of us. Everybody knows I don't need to get into it. But now we've got, you know, really solid backing, and we're going to be actually adding to the team over the next few months. And so hopefully we'll just continue to grow in the space and grow. You know, we've got the podcast with Lindsay and I, Fantasy Dirt, which does really well. We have a following from our time over at Sirius XM, and we'll continue to grow in all the mediums, right? We already have a presence in the podcast world, and, you know, eventually – you know, you could see, you know, Sports Illustrated Fantasy popping up on, you know, some of these, like, you know, these fast start networks. So good stuff. Some big plans for the future.
Right. And to the audience out there, my company, former company, KFootball.com, was one of the first, if not the first, featured fantasy sports company on an NFL pregame by CBS. CBS, Armin Katan, flew out here. He actually is a SoCal. Where I live at Valley Center, he had local ties to. And I remember that interview because I worked from home. Everybody thought we were 20-some-odd people, too. And he comes, I said, the first thing, you know, I invite him to the house. Before he does the interview, you know, he wants to check the setup up. That so when he comes in a few days or a week later or something like that. And then I show him where we work. And he thought we were a bigger company. And it's my garage. And he just looks around. oh my God, this is where you do everything. I go, Armin, we got some pretty big clients, you know, who have no clue of Yahoo Sports being our biggest. You can't show them the washing, the laundry machine washing. He's like, oh no, no. He goes, this is the American dream. And then it went from bad to worse, because then as he's interviewing me, I have two little spoiled foo-foo dogs that my wife loves dearly, and they don't like a stranger in the house. So it's just constant barking. Damn it, you know? So, but yeah, I was proud of that. And you're right, Michael. I have some of the NFL Network's first shows I did, and I just look back. We all do, Larry. We look back at our first film work, and you hear this. It doesn't matter whether it's politics, sports, entertainment, everybody goes, oh dear God, and you cringe. But the thing is we all improved. We all got better. I look back at my first podcast from a year and a half ago, a couple of years ago, and I'll cringe at this 20 years from now. Larry, what were your, did you run across Sports Illustrated, any individuals from Sports Illustrated, or did that cross your path at all in terms of when you did your history here?
Well, it's mentioned in the book, you know, several times. Nothing particular comes to mind. But there were a couple of articles that were published in Inside Sports. I don't remember if they're all in Inside Sports or there were a couple in Sports Illustrated that were kind of, important articles to help people become aware of fantasy football and fantasy baseball. And a lot of the, you know, early companies would advertise in Sporting News, Sports Illustrated, for their games or their services. And when Michael was telling his story about CBS Sportsline, it occurred to me, it's going to sound odd, I already told you a story about a guy in a stall in a men's room. It occurred to me there are at least, in my book, there are at least three stories of men in stalls in bathrooms. Okay, so I'm going to tell you this. The second one, just real quickly, one is Dan Okrent, who's the man primarily credited for inventing fantasy baseball. And by the way, there's a myth that he magically came up with the idea on a plane flight from Connecticut to Texas. That's not true. So that's a bunch of garbage. There's a whole lot more to the story. It goes back 20 years further. But he had a guy asking him a bunch of fantasy questions. You know, it got really annoying for him. People would always ask fantasy questions when they saw him. And he had a guy start asking him questions, and Okrent went into a men's room. And the guy actually followed him into the men's room. Okrent went into a stall, locked the door, and this guy is still standing outside the stall.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But then the third one, which is what Michael reminded me of, my book has the whole background of how Mike Levy started Sportsline and then how it became, got into fantasy and everything. Rick Wolf was one of the first people they hired, and, you know, he was running their fantasy a lot. But Michael mentioned the guy from commissioner.com, Peter Pizarris and his partner created commissioner.com, and they got the idea for it, and they put an ad in Yahoo or somewhere, and all they had was this idea of what they were going to do, and they had like 2 or 3 months to create the entire thing.
Wow.
From scratch. So he and his partner worked 23 hours a day. And he tells me this is going to sound like I'm exaggerating, but I swear to God it's true. I worked 23 hours a day. They were in a building in Manhattan that should have been condemned. There's no hot water, no heat. They slept next to their computers because it was the only source of warmth. They took 30-second freezing showers. And they both had day jobs because they worked their day job for, you know, 8 hours or whatever. And then they did the rest of this, you know, commission.com on the side. And one day, Cazares was in his office, and he just was like going to the men's room or something. He collapsed on the floor, and he realized, like, you know, I can't keep doing this. And his partner suggested, why don't you take a 20-minute power nap at work? That should help. So one day, Pizarro goes into the restroom and sits in a stall, and in the stall, he takes a 20-minute power nap. And after the 20 minutes, he feels great. He gets up. He goes to the sink to wash his face, and he looks in the mirror, and imprinted on his forehead, it says, "If roll empty, slide to the right."
Yeah, nice. Larry, it's funny because you said something to the effect of a minute ago that people may not believe it. No, we, at least those of us in the industry do. Yeah. Ryan Bonini, as all of you both know, he used to take his power naps. The problem was, where's Ryan at? 30, 40 minutes later, you know, 50 minutes, right? And then I was being an ex-sailor, being a guy. I was always the, I always acted the penis there. I'd quietly go up there. I didn't even need to be quietly. And I'd just take a breath and then, bam, bam, you know, he's on the john and jumping up, you know, but yes, I worked a day job. I come home and kiss the wife, jump on the computer, and Ryan and I, we'd work on putting the preseason guide. Ours was massive. And I remember Bob telling me about hot off the wire, because back then we didn't have the technology that we do now where it's a breeze. You know, back then everything was newspapers, manuals, and we weren't just putting a few notes out. We were embarrassing all our competitors. And there was at one point we had all the contracts, Fox Sports, Yahoo, My Fantasy League, which just sold, I learned earlier this year, and a few others. Our player news was everywhere. And, Bob, you're right. It nearly killed us. There were, for a period of 3 years, there were a period, Larry, of a few months, I was getting an hour sleep and going to the day job. And I was just, I had the military in me, so I was disciplined in that sense. And, it drains you. But that's, you remember those times in a good way. Even though at the time you were miserable, because not only did you overcome, you succeeded. And with that, I want to bring, Mr. Greg Kellogg and Big John. And when I bring them on, Bob, I'd like for you to take the stage here for just a couple of minutes. And before I bring them on, I want to mention Emo Catholic. Emo Catholic is dear to me. Emo, my company, KFFL, before I sold it, was one of the biggest fantasy sports companies, bar none. I remember a certain CBS sports line executive who's now still in the industry, well-known, been in the industry every year, still there, telling me in a drunken stupor, because at the seminars, Larry, after the seminars, we'd all wind up at the bar saying, we're watching what y'all are doing, and we're just going to copy and take it, you know? It was the best compliment I could get, you know, at the same time. Your company is worth, you know, 50, 60 million in money. I'm a little startup in my room here, man. You know, but Emo helped in getting us that start, getting us that break, putting us on the path to that. And what I loved about Emo is, he gave everybody those breaks. Emo put out a handful of magazines. He was friendly to everybody. He Emo's human. I'm sure he had his flaws. We all do. But what he contributed to the industry, I think you mentioned CDM, Larry, and Charlie Wieger is known as the godfather of fantasy sports. That was the nickname he was given. But to me, that will always be Emo, because a lot of the companies that became successful, a lot of the mid-tier companies, I'm not talking the conglomerates, a lot of the personalities, we were able to succeed in part because of that exposure Emo gave us. And I don't want Bob to get too personal. I don't want to get into your personal life. But, Bob, it seems to me that Emo was there for you when you were in tough times yourself. And and Emo was a rocket scientist. You know,
Nuclear scientist.
Yeah. I always love saying rocket scientist only because that's what people relate to. He was a true rocket. You know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist. Well, I got one over here. You know, and I just can't say enough. And he left us this year. And Bob, I'm kind of taking your air here and thunder here, but I just want, that's how important Emo meant to me. And I've never forgotten that. And, I will always take his memory to my grave. And I'm going to bring Greg and Big John on. But Bob, if you can tell us that, and then I'll introduce these guys after that.
Sure. So Larry shared a story a little while ago where I was run out of town by my grandma. But like, I had been literally, you know, the joke is living in your grandma's basement. Well, it was a back room at her house. And, you know, just like, you know, when are you going to make money? Well, I don't know. I'm working on it. And I had ties to Emo. I started working with him like right from the get-go. He was, you know, he was very outgoing and called. And so he left his nuclear engineering job in 1990 and started Fantasy Sports Publication. So he called me when he saw I had ads placed in USA Today and wanted me to buy ads with him. But as you mentioned, he would talk. He would talk to everybody endlessly. So we talked, and over time I started doing work for him. And by 1996, I was doing a lot of work for him. And then when I said, hey, Emo, I'm probably going to have to stop doing this, he said, well, you know what? why don't you come here? And here was Albuquerque. I was in Tucson, and come work for me. And he flew out, got a U-Haul truck, packed up my stuff, and drove me to Albuquerque. And that was in 1998. And it was a great combination. And you mentioned the magazines. He founded FSP, Fantasy Sports Publications, 1990. Made the Pro Forecast magazine was his first magazine that first year. Eventually, we had four other titles. Over time, it was the largest print distribution in the industry. It had over a million titles on new shelves, newsstands every year. In 2002, he founded the World Championship of Fantasy Football. The original high-stakes fantasy football event earned him the 2018 Matthew Berry Game Changer Award. It really changed a lot about the industry. People were really skeptical, and it was a huge step, right? It was a huge investment. Nobody knew how it was going to work out. It obviously worked out well as the proliferation of those contests grew. The big thing for Emil was always, promoting the people, the content creators. So part of that was he and I and two other people, Kirk Boyellis and Ryan Houston, founded the Fantasy Sports Writers Association in 2004. He was in the first Hall of Fame class in 2011 of that as well. He should have been. And so, and that continued. Like there's a website out there you can go to, fantasynation.com, where he has interviews with like 30 or more of the pioneers of the industry and spent like an hour talking to them and getting their story. So you can go check all that out as well on that website. But he passed away early this season, right the end of August. Just a tough battle with cancer. He fought it hard. He knew where it was going, and it told me at some point last year, hey, you're probably going to have to find a job. And you could tell he felt really bad about that more than he felt bad for himself, right? Like, it's just how he was. So great guy and did a lot for this industry. And I'm sure, many people, realize this, but if you don't, go out and poke around a little bit, do some searches, check out Fantasy Nation to find some great stuff. But yeah, great guy.
Yeah, his story is in my book also.
Yep.
And one thing about, I just want to mention about ML is my book is full of stories about the entrepreneurs who created this industry. And what would happen is they would see a need for something that didn't exist and they would do it, or they'd see something that existed, but they thought they could do better, so they would do that. And is it Emil or Emil? I've never got clear.
Everyone said it different. I say Emil.
Right. I'll say Mr. Cadillac. Mr. Cadillac, what happened? He's in Albuquerque, as you mentioned, and he started playing fantasy football and thought, boy, this is great, but there's no information. Like, I should start a magazine. And he didn't, because there's no, he said there's no magazines. But what he didn't know is actually Ian Allen and Bruce Taylor had started Fantasy Football Index, and someone else had started something, but they hadn't reached Albuquerque. So Emil didn't know that there were other magazines in existence, so he started one. So it's possible if Fantasy Football Index had gotten to Albuquerque, Emil may never have done this. And
that's
a similar thing.
Point.
Yeah, Jeff, a similar thing, Peter Schenke and Herb Ilk, two of the founders of RotoWire, they actually wanted to do something. It didn't have to be in fantasy sports. They just wanted to start something. And they actually had an idea to start a wedding planning company. And they did some research, and they found out a company called The Knot had started 6 months prior. So they thought, all right, somebody's already doing it. Never mind. And their next idea was for a fantasy sports news service, which became RotoWire. And had The Knot started 7 months later, it's possible there'd be no RotoWire. It's possible that Peter Schenke and Herb Ilk would be running some kind of wedding planning company. And the third partner, Jeff Erickson, who knows what he'd be doing.
Right, right. I remember those two. Those are great people. I remember, I don't think Chris List was ever a partner, but Chris List was somebody over at the Trey seminars for some reason for like 4 or 5 years at 1 a.m. We'd always meet up, pure coincidence, and if they were usually in Vegas or Chicago at that time, then we'd always end up having a breakfast. So we kind of bonded that way. And with that, let me introduce you to Greg Kellogg, who is, Greg, I'd like for you to speak about Fanex a little bit. And then we also have my producer, Big John here, who is also my business partner now. I discovered him because he had one of the first fantasy sites, and I wanted Big John to talk about his fantasy minute. What I learned about John, and I don't know, Larry, how deep he got into it, but John actually got his fantasy minute syndicated across the nation to various radio stations. Tell us a little bit about that, John.
Yeah, it was strange. And, you know, listening to all these fantasy football and fantasy sports legends, you know, it brings back so many memories. You know, and at this age, that's hard to do, you know, trying to conjure them all up. But, you know, you were talking about Fabs being in New York at the time and how he just got out right before 9/11. I was down there, Fabs. I worked at the Bankers Trust building, which is right across the street, adjacent to the fire station, you know. And when 9/11 happened, I was still actually doing my first podcast before it was called podcast. It was something that I had come up with called WGRD Radio. Ironically enough, I was there and I recorded it live while 9/11 was happening because I was trapped on, you know, the 39th floor. I was stuck. You know?
Oh, geez. Wow.
So and I said to myself, after doing that, I just said, that's it. I'm not doing anymore. This is the last podcast I'll ever make. Perfect timing, right? Because then podcasting exploded just as soon as I had gotten out of it. But to William's point, I had been doing pre-recorded stuff, and I used to pick up the phone and just call PDs all around the country. Someone had given me a database of local AM stations, sports talk stations, and I just called them up and said, hey, would you guys be interested in a syndicated fantasy football minute? You'll get it every Wednesday morning. And I would sit in my office basement, much like I do now, and just record this thing on a little USB microphone, you know, 1 minute, top players to start this week, and I'd send it out. It got syndicated out to 60, 70 local stations around the country. And that led to a lot of different opportunities for me. I was on a lot of local sports talk. I'd go – now, you have to understand, I had a full-time job. Larry mentioned some other folks had full-time jobs. I had a full-time job too, so I'd go back in my office. Greg is laughing because Greg was one of the first people I brought onto my site to help me and write for me. I'd go lock myself in the office in my Wall Street office and spend 3 hours calling these radio stations in succession, you know, like – hey, who to start? Who to bench this week? You know, and it was fun times, you know, and relate to a lot of what you guys said. Mike, I didn't know you were at commissioner.com. My first company, Gridiron Grumblings, we were supposed to be the exclusive content provider for commissioner.com. But back then, one of my writers who didn't understand how to use CC lists and emails replied to an email I sent him saying, and I said, hey guys, look, we got to be on our A game. These guys are checking out our content. You know, they're ready to offer us a deal. And for the life of me, I couldn't remember their names right now, who's on the commissioner.com side. And he sent some stupid comment, like all of us are apt to do it at a young age, saying, well, tell them if they don't come across with the cash, we ain't doing squat for them, you know. But he copied everybody on the list, you know.
Oh, geez.
So yeah. Whoever was on the commissioner.com side.
That was probably, it may have been David Hirsch or Mike Gersh or Pez.
Yeah. Now,
well, we know what happened. Yeah, the link for trash right after that email. You know?
And that actually ended up working out good for me, I guess, right, guys?
So I always laugh. It's like one stupid email and it's like it could all be undone. But, so that's the fantasy football minute came out of desperation. It's like, I got to get our name out there. And, so fantasy football minute was probably the first syndicated fantasy football, fantasy sports content that I can recall, at least.
Right. And, Greg, you started baseball has the lore, the myth, the tradition with the labor leagues. Talent Wars came later, but when you think baseball in its history, you always think of the labor league. For some reason, that stands out. But you had one of the very first, if not the first, experts football league, which I won the championship in the what do they call it when you pick your lineup and you don't change anything? I forget what that term is.
Best ball.
Best Buy. Okay, yeah. Well, you guys were doing that for a while. But tell us a bit about FanX and to start there and your travels to Fox Sports.
Hey, I just want to quickly interrupt. Emil Kadlec always loved to remind everybody he's the guy who came up with the idea for Best Ball.
Yep.
If Emil were here, he would. He always told people, I'm the guy. All right, go ahead, Greg. I'm sorry.
It's okay, Larry. FanX came about because Joe Bryant and I looked at labor and Tout Wars and said, why don't we have that for fantasy football? Now, the thing about FanX is it was the Fantasy Experts League, but that just seemed too long. FanX just seemed to flow better, so we changed the name. We shortened it. It's still running to this day, and I left in 2016 because I stepped away from the industry entirely. And Fabs, I apologize, man. I didn't know you back then or you'd have been in it. You'd have been one of the first. Bob Harris was in it. John was in it. William was in it. Pretty much everybody that we've talked about here, John Hansen and Steve Cohen dominated for 3 years in a row. They won it. But it's just a league of guys that love what I love about this hobby more than anything are the friends you make. And the diverse backgrounds. We have liberals, conservatives, moderates politically. We have your partner was from the UP, the Upper Peninsula. He's a Uper from Michigan. Benini and I actually went to college in the UP. We always do this to show Michigan way up here, Michigan Tech. So Bob Harris and I would talk for hours, 3 days a week minimum. And he would always take my call, and he was the true professional. To this day, I don't know how I got into the hall before he did. He definitely deserved to be in that first class. Bob Harris is the original. And you know,
the thing about FanX that I don't want to gloss over is Larry, at the time, labor was dominant. But what made FanX unique was there was no social media. I mean, there was MySpace. But it was the forums. Everybody would talk about the picks on various forums, you know, and rec. The picks would be put in the forum.
Football.fantasy, rec.sport.football.fantasy.
Yeah. Yes.
Old-timers remember that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And James Sierra and Jim Lenz, Fantasy Insights, started putting together conventions out in Vegas. And so we went out there. I don't know who came up with the idea. It might have been Bob, might have been me, could have been anybody. But we decided to do an analysis draft live on stage there where we would make a pick and then spend 30 to 60 seconds talking about why we picked that player. Now, we could only get two rounds done in the time we had allotted. But, I mean, it was – we got pretty good response, I think, from the crowd because everybody was there was for fantasy football. But the hobby is wonderful, and you make lifelong friends. You really do. And it's self-cleansing. I had a really good friend. I'm not going to name him here, but I'm sure at least four people here know who I'm talking about. He commissioned FanX for a while, and he got in trouble by keeping people's money in pay leagues. And so I still like the guy, but I wouldn't trust him because of that. But he's gone. You'll never hear his name in fantasy football anymore because it's self-cleansing. If you get a reputation of being a bad guy in fantasy football, you're gone. Babs is still here because he's a great guy. Bob Harris is here because he's a great guy. John, William. William could get back into fantasy football tomorrow and somebody would pay him. No doubt. Now, what I want to know is why you guys never hired me.
It explains why I'm not getting paid anymore. Yeah, it explains why I'm not in the industry anymore. Greg, you're absolutely right. Self-cleansing.
You know, guys, we're at 55 minutes, and we slotted for an hour here because of time limits. Before we go, and I want to close it out with you, Larry, so I'll go to you last. Give me your best memory, your thought, whatever you want to say that sticks with you in regards to fantasy sports here. Let's start with Greg, since you're talking here now. What's your memory that's dear to you that you want to impart to the audience?
The nights talking to Bob mainly, but I want to say something about the book. He's got a section here, Women Against Fantasy Football. or Women and Wives Against Fantasy Football. There's now a group of women of fantasy football that's growing, that have podcasts. Women are exploding in this hobby, and I think it's great, personally. We've got kids, we've got women. It crosses all boundaries. It really does.
You know, that's a great point. A real quick story on that. We ran commissioner leagues. We went out buying all these small leagues, and we used my fantasy league. And there was this one, we were actual commissioners for these leagues. There was this one woman, her first year playing, all guys. She had a losing record, but was qualifying for the playoffs. They wanted to change the rules to keep her out. As a commissioner, I said, no, you can't do that mid-season next year. Just because she's a woman and had a losing record. You know how fantasy is, just like NFL. A team gets on a run, and they go all the way.
I hope she won the league.
They were so disgusted, they decided to run their own league the next year. Fabs, what's your biggest and greatest memory here, and what would you like to impart?
Yeah, there's not one thing in particular. I've just been blessed to be able to become friends with people that I actually was drafting in fantasy leagues, right? I mean, back in the day, you know, Marshall Faulk and, you know, Michael Irvin and guys like that. And I got to work with a lot of those guys, LaDainian Tomlinson. And I call a lot of those people friends, Kurt Warner. I could go on. And so that's been a big part of it. But it's really about the people that I've come across in the industry that, like Bob. Again, Bob, you know, we break each other's balls constantly, but he's a dear friend and one of my best friends. Tristan Cockcroft, one of my best friends. And I've just cultivated a lot of great relationships with people through this industry. And, you know, William, you mentioned them again. There's people that we don't like, right? I mean, in all walks of life, you know, it doesn't have to just be the fantasy industry. But I think for the most part, we all stick together and we got each other's backs because we all know how hard it was to get to where we are and doing what we do, because fantasy and hell, sometimes to this day, it's the redheaded stepchild. When I started with the NFL, they didn't want fantasy football before that. They thought it was gambling, and we all know what's happened now with the NFL. I mean, you know, like they don't want to admit it. They're making a ton of money through gambling and fantasy, et cetera. But we were always the redheaded stepchild, or in Bob's case, the bald-headed stepchild. And we have always stuck together, and I think that's a big part of the industry.
Larry, that is true in that sense. I'm 57. It's the only time in my life I have ever seen an industry and a group of people who we bonded together. And we always wanted to outdo one another, but we never wanted to see somebody fail. It was very unique, and it's one of the things I noticed. Big John, what's your take on all this? What's one of your memories?
Oh, well, I agree with what a lot of people said, but one of my biggest I don't know if it's regrets or whatever, is that I never stuck to it long enough. You know, when I started, it was 1993, technically, when I started. I was working at a Wall Street bank, and someone came up to me and said, we heard about this thing called the internet. And this was pre-Andreessen's browser and everything. So being an egghead, much, you know, and I related to what Bob had to say a lot of times, I became a web designer for a Wall Street bank. And the way I taught myself all this new technology was, I'll never forget it. I posted a board with one topic. If you could start an NFL team, which player would you pick? That was the question. And I just threw it up there for laughs, thinking just like five fellow Wall Street nerds would answer. Next morning, I come to the office. I had over 1,000 messages like, how could you not go with Marshall Faulk? How could you not do this? How could you not do that? And I just said, hey, this could be something. And that's when my site started. Of course, I got tired of it. And I didn't pursue it as a business. It was always a hobby for me. So all the missed opportunities for me, like whether it's internet, radio, I had the first, you know, Florio. I remember seeing him at the NFL draft saying, how do you do that radio show? Tell me how to do it. I'm starting something called, I think it was Pro Football Talk or something like that at the time. And he's like, tell me how to do that. You know, okay, I'll tell you how to do that. You know, send me an email. I'll tell you how to do that. You know, see where
we all share information. Yeah. Everybody does.
Yeah, back right. Greg was someone like that when he went to fantasies. By the way, no truth to the rumor that McFarlane saw him on the Fox lot and created Family Guy after that. Absolutely, that's true.
I'm waiting for my royalty check. I still haven't got it.
So, in regards to Big John there talking about how he never stuck with it, Sergeant Slaughter, for all you WWE fans, he just had his, maybe a year or so ago, his own 30 on 30 special or something like that, and he mentions, I had the first wrestling computer game. Big John is the guy who designed and built that game for him. And got to wrestle with Sergeant Slaughter in the ring. So, yes, Big John, hopefully you'll stick with this current.
I've fallen victim to the Cobra Clutch, absolutely, yes, in the middle of the ring, yeah.
That's one job you should probably quit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I still put my money on the 70-year-old or 80-year-old Sergeant Slaughter.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Brother Bob Harris, you've had a tremendous run that is still going. What would you like to impart in terms of one of your best memories? And to Bob, you're a superstar. And I apologize, Mike. I should ask you the same question, too. But what would be your advice to up-and-comers?
Starting with the advice to up-and-comers reps. Do everything you can. Get on everything you can. Say yes to everything when you're invited on shows, whatever. Every opportunity you get a little bit better, and that's to me the key. And just be yourself. It's like the big memory, the overarching thing for me is the love of this hobby that brings people together, that connects you with a sport that you love. That's what started for me. And the year of our Lord, 1986, a friend came to me and said, Bob, we have this thing we found. You're going to love it. And it was fantasy football, and I still love it. And, and I think one of the biggest memories for me is like about a week into playing it, I said, you guys, we don't know enough to do this right. Like, and that was the kernel for me of the idea of like, man, we got to get information. These people need information. And I thought, if everybody out there loves this as much as I do, I'm going to be a very wealthy man. Well, half of that was true. Everyone out there loved it as much as I do. So, and I think all of us here share that same love. And I think everyone, that's why we connect with our audiences. It's why our audiences connect with us. We are them. They are us. And I always say, like, the average reader or member of my audience is pretty sure, but for some quirk of fate or twist of turn of life, that they would be doing what I'm doing and doing it just as well, if not better. And the truth is, they're not wrong. They might well be, right? I mean, it's truly a unifying, great thing that levels the field for all of us, men, women, children. Everybody can have a good time playing this. So that's kind of my big, there's so many memories that you can't recount them all. And most of them include people in this chat. So. I think the biggest part of it is like just the relationships you build through this great game that we all love. It's connecting you to the sport you all love. If you're out there and you stumble across this and you're not playing, I've got some advice. Start playing. You're going to love it.
Yeah, my biggest memory, and I'll never forget this one. It's not the most memorable, but for me, it was special because, the seminar started in Fantasy Football Weekly at the time, turned into FanBob. They put on an event. And I was asked to speak. So everybody was speaking. I spoke 10 minutes and I go, I'm done speaking. I know why you're here. Ask away. And boom, it was like 40 minutes of just people asking their questions and the crowd was riled up. And then as I'm walking off the stage, Chris Mortensen stops me. He goes, that was a hell of a performance you just put on there, because I was different, and I'll never forget that. He was one of the first big wigs, and he was a rest in peace, Chris, another kind-hearted soul who has left us, and I'll never forget that. But for me, it was America. My mother growing up poor, dirt poor. I always tell people, y'all don't know poor until you come see my family in Panama. And she was always talking about America, the opportunity. She worked a factory job. My aunt now has a master's. His teachers brought her up from poverty. And I remember doing this, and to me, I was like, oh, my God. This is the American opportunity. This is what it's all about. And Bob, you're correct. It didn't bring tremendous wealth, but we made our mark and we had an impact and we changed lives from the fans who adored us because what we were doing to make their life fun and enjoyable, as well as our own success. I always sit there and say, who would think a 5'7" Latino could make an impact? And I say that because football is obviously king in that. Larry, you're going to close it out here.
Just a second. And before we go to Larry or Mike, and we all love doing it regardless of the money. I don't think any of us didn't enjoy doing it. It was, it made us rich, but not financially. And it made some people rich financially. I don't think Joe Biden is hurting for money. I really don't.
I lived the American dream. I was able to sell the company before DFS for a cash grab. I guess you could say like a better word. But to me, that's part of the American dream. We do it for the passion. The side benefit of it is you can get taken care of. Larry, for you, what did you learn from your research in all of this? What do you take out of it? And the final caveat is, when you look at the landscape today, what do you see in terms of fantasy?
Okay. I want to pick up on some of what Greg and Bob said. Because what happened when I started the research and everything, I had no idea something that was going to become a major theme of the book, which is what Greg and Bob were partially talking about, is the relationship building. Fantasy sports, my conclusion, fantasy sports are great and they bring people together. You got people who are in high school or college, probably would have drifted apart over the years, but they started a fantasy league and they've been doing it 30, 40, 50 years. You got parents and children play, coworkers. You have a company where you got the sales department, the accounting department. Ordinarily, they would never interact with each other, but they do because of the fantasy league. You got a draft in Vegas where you got a plumber sitting next to the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. The two of them are talking like they're best buddies. You know, so it's a cultural phenomenon, and it's great because people love it and it brings people together like crazy. Mark Mariani, one of the guys I interviewed for the book, worked at CBS Sports and Turner Sports. And he said, his first job in sports, he was in Chicago and he was invited to a company fantasy football league. He had never heard of fantasy football. When they explained it to him, he realized, if I join this league, I can call my boss's boss in the fantasy office in Manhattan, and he'll take my call to talk about a trade or whatever. Whereas ordinarily, this guy wouldn't take his call in a million years. So he joined the league. Yeah, so that was a big, that's like, I didn't realize this was going to happen when I started, but probably the big takeaway of the book is just the relationships that it builds. And also for people in the industry, like I've been in tout wars and labor, but I'm not really in the industry. But people who are in the industry, like you've all been talking about with each other, Michael and best friend, great friends with Bob, et cetera. Builds relationships, people who are in the industry or people who've been like in tout wars and labor. We're all friends for years, a lot of us. Yeah, so that's it.
Well, Larry, before we sign off here, what's your take of the industry today? It's like I can't turn around on social media without seeing an expert here or there. I think it's great, but it's so much out there now. It's tough to consume. Obviously, you listen to these legends here and their shows and all that, but when you look at the landscape, what do you see today?
Well, I think the other question you asked was about where we're going.
What you learned out of it, we talked about what you got out of it, but yeah, in the landscape, where do you see it going now?
I have no idea where we're going. I mean, the book and my research is all about how it started and how we got till today. As far as where we're going, I don't know. I mean, it's massive. It's going to stay massive. There's always going to be season-long fantasy sports. There's always going to be daily fantasy sports. There's a statistic that a lot of people have known, which is that 50 million people in the United States are estimated to play fantasy sports. And that's age 18 and up. That doesn't even count under 18. There's a lot of under 18 that play fantasy sports. But what most people don't know, and I didn't know until I was researching, in India, there are 200 million people playing fantasy cricket.
Cricket, right, yeah.
The big cricket company there, Dream 11, is worth $8 billion.
Yep.
So, it's just huge. I don't know where we're going. I mean,
It's going international. With the NFL adding games every year, to Europe and other nations. It's going international. Fantasy sports is going to grow.
Well, it's already international. I mean, cricket in India and other countries, and soccer is really big in Europe and South America. So it's already international. But it's, you know, Greg, I mean, yeah, American football is going to be even more popular. I did a podcast last week with a couple of guys in England, and one of them is a big Steelers fan, and he plays fantasy football.
Right. And, you're right. I did my research, before DraftKings got his third round of funding. I was working with Rudy Menendez of FanBall. And, you're right. One of my takes was, basketball internationally and cricket. And when I would bring that up to friends, I'm looking at cricket, you know, and people don't realize cricket dwarfs a lot of the American fantasy sports just because of the sheer numbers over there. And everybody, I want to thank you all for coming on. I want to give a plug here. It's Christmas time, people. The history of fantasy sports and stories of the people who made it happen. You can pick it up at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. I would encourage you, if you want to get in the industry, read about the people, because a lot of these people are still in the industry and they're more than willing to sit down to talk to you and give you advice. And with that, Bob, it was wonderful to see you. It was wonderful talk about Emo Kavik. Greg, it's always great to see you. I see you sporting the little retiree hat there. You know, Fabs, I haven't seen you in years. You hold a special spot in my heart for everything you did over there and taking the showing the courage to go cross country to somewhere you've never been with NFL.com. Big John, I will see you in a few minutes. And Larry, thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to do this. I wanted to make sure when I did this, I brought on some legends to give the book its proper due, and I believe I did that. So thank you all. My name is William Del Pilar. This is Points on the Board. And until next time, I bid you adieu.